You're listening to The Read Out, one development leader, their big idea, and how it can shape the future of Australian development assistance. Hosted by Lab CEO, Bridie Rice.
In August 2024, the Australian government released its international development policy. The new policy was welcomed publicly and positively by many Australian development stakeholders. They pointed to the fact that this was the first new development policy on the books for almost a decade. Some of us said it was a good starting point for reform after a tumultuous period in Australian development. And many argued it was good to finally see government elevate the role of international development in Australian international affairs. But since those early days of the policy launch, less public conversations have also been brewing. And now others are coming out arguing that there is a gap between the political rhetoric of the policy and its reality on the ground, both inside the Department of Foreign Affairs and, most importantly, in the countries where Australian development dollars are being put to work. To discuss this and more, I have with me Richard Moore, former Deputy Director General of AusAid, now independent consultant and, lucky for me, strategic advisor at the Development Intelligence Lab. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Bridie.
Now, Richard has just published a critique of Australia's development policy. The title is Australian Development Cooperation, Urgent and Important, but Not a Priority. And listeners can find it on the Lowy Institute's interpreter. Now, Richard, like all your written work, you cut through with a certain rhetorical flourish of the pen that leaves us in absolutely no doubt of what you are thinking. And in this article, you're essentially saying that despite all the government's positive rhetoric, there is no evidence that the government is putting development front and centre of its relations in the region. What's the fire in your belly?
Let me start with the fact that actually I don't think that it's a reasonable aspiration for development to be front and center in perpetuity. So I'm not asking for that or expecting that. What I do want to see is that development in the countries that matter to Australia, that their development plans and programs are taken seriously by Australia, and that the aspiration to support that development is a tier one issue for us. There'll be lots of other tier one issues that'll be in competition with it. So sometimes it'll be front and center, sometimes it'll be on the side. But if we take it seriously, then that forces us to do a whole bunch of things in order to gear for it that we're not currently doing. So it's great to have the aspiration of being more effective and impactful. But if we haven't actually got the system working to that end, then we're going to be sadly let down by what we can achieve. You know, we've had 10 years proceeding very cautiously and constructively and surfacing a few ideas. And I think there was a hope that with a new government, there'd be that moment where you can move forward convincingly. And I don't think we've taken that. We've seen COVID, we've seen contestation, we've got climate change, these big three, and they haven't shifted the dial very much. And we know what happened post-integration. There was a redistribution of resources to mainstream diplomacy. Now, that was understandable. The department has been chronically underfunded. And so integration provided a fillip to starved diplomacy. You know, that mine has been exhausted. You know, defects back where we started more than 10 years ago, chronically underfunded. And on the development side, there just is not the capability there. And capability isn't just skills. Systems to make the most of what we're trying to do. We've got $5 billion at stake a year, and we're just not making the most of it. A lot of people, I think, don't realize what we could be doing. This is a principal means of engagement with the region, working with them on important stuff that matters to them, but also matters to us, because these are big problems that if we don't help get sorted, they're going to bounce back on us in a serious way. So the small steps forward are welcome, but they don't seem to be commensurate with the situation that we're in. We're now facing a very difficult and dangerous future. So I totally agree with the diagnosis at the beginning.
Well, Richard, that is certainly a hell of a lot of fire in your belly. But one of the things I love the most about Lowy Interpreter articles has got to be that the editor, Dan Flitton, absolutely insists on a sharp byline that draws the reader in. And for your article, your byline is, "Development Policy Contradictions Reveal the Failure of the DFAT-AusAid Integration." This is the integration you're talking about. I mean, ouch. This is a big statement. So first up, talk our listeners through the biggest contradiction you're seeing. And second, if that merger is a failure, then what's your alternative?
Well, look, on the latter, let me start there just by saying this isn't a judgment that I've come to in a hurry. Like others, I've tried very hard to see the upsides, to be constructive, to play the long game. But we're 10 years in now, and we are not making serious headway. And so I think the time has come to be upfront and honest about that. There's a lot we've got to do with our friends in the region, in Southeast Asia, in Pacific, but globally too. God knows, huge global issues that require middle powers to step up and do more. And we're not doing that, nor are others. But there's a real opportunity and a need for Australia to be helping to define the future. If we want a rules-based order, we're going to have to renegotiate a lot of the rules. A lot of the countries in this region, whether they're small or large, but particularly those that have grown fast and have more economic and political weight, they want more say in the future. There's going to be a lot of renegotiation to be done, and we need to be in the best possible position to contribute to that. Now, we haven't got many ways at our disposal to build our knowledge about the region and to work cooperatively in practical ways all the time between white papers, which are, 14 years apart. We need daily means of engaging on these big things. That's where we get influence. That's where we burnish our national reputation. That's where we create a region of cooperation and partnership. Other big contradictions, the resources that are devoted to defense, which are going up and understandably so. But on the diplomatic side, on the development side, there's no balance. And that's very disappointing. There are entreaties in the policy to focus, but then we don't really follow through on those. And the objective of peace, stability, prosperity is very, very broad. And the Indo-Pacific framing, I mean, half the world. So I would certainly want that to be much narrower, much clearer, sending much sharper messages to staff about where is really important and what do we need to do in order to maximize our ability to shape regional development. The policy, in my view, is not a development policy. We've never had one because before the integration, it's absolutely true that AusAid was trying to impact policy, but often unsuccessfully, and was relegated merrily to aid. The great promise of integration was that we would be bringing different policy instruments to bear. I don't see much evidence of that. There's no discussion in the paper about that. So to me, we've decided we want to not only run the 1,000 meters, but we want to win it. But all we've done today is buy a new pair of trainers. Well, that's just not enough. There's an awful lot more to do.
Richard, in your article, when you're talking about the development policy, you are pretty unequivocal that this is now not a time to unscramble the egg, as the lazy euphemism goes, is what you say. But you do put it out there that there are alternatives that should be on the table. Talk us through it.
Well, okay. I don't want to be too prescriptive in this regard. I had a go 5 years ago at sketching what I thought might work well and be consistent both with integration and with having all of these capabilities within the one department, but also doing it a lot better. And that didn't go anywhere. But at the point, there isn't just one option. There'd be a range of possibilities if we were going to revisit this question today. And the question is, how do we achieve the best development outcomes from the resources that we've got? I think we have to test alternative models. The model that we have was adopted without a transparent working through of the pros and cons. And it's actually one of the most radical models in the OECD. We distributed the development capability across the whole of the department, and the central areas are not very strong, and indeed, we've seen the demise even of the governance area, which is essential in order to inform thinking and planning and dialogue. So I don't think there's one better model. I think what we should be doing is not looking backwards, but looking forward and going through a process of thinking, what are these challenges going to mean for us and the region? How might we best respond to them? How do we have to get organized in order to do that? And I can understand government not wanting long, drawn out review processes, but I was very inspired by the UK strategic review, which resulted in 100 pages and a brand new framework full of specific measures that were resourced and where policy was all joined up. I thought it was extraordinary. And I do think we should be moving through that sort of very quick process where essentially maybe we would commission some work, we would seek ideas, we would then put together a whole of government team with a lot of development expertise, but by no means exclusively. And then we would rapidly try to come to a view about what a future capability should look like.
And of course, just in the last couple of days, we have seen the UK release a white paper on development specifically in a contested environment. So there's a lot of strategy work coming out of that part of the world. Well, Richard, we are close to the finish line of this episode. And of course, now it is time for our lab hypothetical. So imagine you still have that fire in your belly about the new development policy, and you're standing in the lobby of a hotel. As you make your way to the elevator, you find the Australian Development Minister on your left and Australia's Foreign Minister standing there on your right. Miraculously, as the elevator doors open, their minders disappear and the three of you step in, and you realise that you have 1 minute alone with them. What would you say?
Ministers, it's great to see you here, and I don't doubt your passion and commitment in terms of development, but I think you're underestimating what is required in order to deliver on your vision. We've got to regear the whole system for high performance. At the moment, it's geared for low performance. We've got a lot to do, and it hasn't adequately defined. DFAT can't fix this problem, and it's a mistake to delegate the task to them. There's all sorts of reasons why they will not be able to fix this. You're going to need an external process in order to get outside of the constraints that you're facing. And that needs to start with an even sharper vision of what you want. But there's lots of people and lots of capability that can help you in this task. Let's talk again soon.
Richard Moore, that was a fantastic pitch. I get the feeling you've advised many ministers in your day, and a great conversation that I'm sure our listeners found good as well. So thank you for the chat, Richard.
Thank you.
Join me next time on The Readout, where each episode we sit down with one author, one big idea, and talk about how it can shape the future of Australia's development assistance. If you liked hearing from Richard, you can find a link to his article in our show notes and his publications on our website. And if you want extra previews, insights, and development analysis, then sign up to our email at devintelligencelab.com. A special thanks from me to the lab team behind the scenes, Ruby St. Ledger and Walter Kanagi. I'm Bridie Rice. This is The Readout. Talk soon.
We at The Lab acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which this podcast is recorded, the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and we extend our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We're inspired by the storytelling tradition of the world's oldest living culture, and we pay homage to it when we share our stories or intelligence on this podcast.